This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, and maybe with you on the phone if you have a question for Zorba. Here's our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Throughout the hour, Zorba talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Some research to talk about, Zorba?
Yes, hospitals that have to make changes because of the obesity epidemic. We'll talk about what that means for you as a consumer and what it means for hospitals if you work there.
And what it means for all of us as a society,
too. Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of issues here. And the midnight munchies may be linked to a popular sleeping pill. Little food there if you take a sleeping pill.
The midnight munchies linked to a sleeping pill.
We'll talk about effects and side
effects. I'm intrigued. What's our recipe?
Lamb chops and mint sauce. Seems like an old recipe. It's important to know when you're going to cook red meat, how to cook it, how to eat it, how to reduce the cholesterol so that you can enjoy that on the occasional basis.
And you've assigned our producer to actually produce some mint sauce.
That's right. That's right. To produce the mint sauce, and he's done it. So we'll try it.
That coming up. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a 14-year-old daughter who had an anaphylactic reaction to peanuts when she was a toddler.
Anaphylactic reaction. Now, for those who don't know the word anaphylactic, and it will be on the test, so you have to know how to spell it, before you shut off the radio, it means anaphylaxis is what you get, which is a severe allergic reaction that we always worry about with people, for instance, who are penicillin allergic or so on. So she had this anaphylactoid, severe allergic reaction to what?
Peanuts.
Oh, to peanuts, yeah.
Peanuts.
Yeah.
And since then, of course, we've been very careful with what she eats, and she carries an EpiPen with her.
Yeah. Now, how do you be very careful? You know, as a mom, peanuts are in everything that's prepared practically.
Yeah, a lot. And you know, it's gotten harder, really, with the labeling, because now in the last probably, 3 or 4 years, on the bottom of almost everything it says, you know, manufactured in a plant that may have had a peanut at some point in its existence. You know, I mean, it's really gotten...
What has happened is this, and let me give you a perfect example of this. This was in one of the journals, New England Journal of Medicine or JAMA. This is a woman who came into the hospital, and she was having some problems, and they were not allergic-type problems. Physician came over to her who had just eaten peanuts, was close to her, face-to-face as he's examining her. She was breathing in the peanut smell from his mouth. No one really realized this was going on and went into anaphylactoid shock. And they couldn't figure out why she went into this anaphylaxis. And it took a while before they figured that out. So some people are so allergic that even the, even the slight smell of peanuts almost can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And that's why they started putting that down there. You know, may have had peanuts used a year ago.
I know.
They don't want to have any liability for it.
So how can Zorba help you?
Well, the question is, I had purchased a bag of potato chips and looked at the new labeling that the FDA put on, and it had allergens, and it did not list peanuts.
Okay.
But out of habit, I looked at all the ingredients, and peanut oil was listed.
Wow.
And
Peanut oil was listed in an ingredient.
It was. Peanut oil was listed. So thinking I was, doing a great service, that somebody had made a huge mistake, I immediately called the potato chip company, and they told me that peanut oil is not a peanut allergen, according to the FDA, that they did not have to list peanuts if they used peanut oil. And I wanted to find out if that's a 100% safe thing for my daughter to eat.
That's a very interesting point. I assume that peanut oil, because it's derived from peanuts, can cause anaphylaxis. That's what I would assume. And I have no idea why. And who'd you talk to at the company?
It was whoever the consumer...
Yeah.
I don't understand. Whoever she talked with isn't the problem. The problem is that they have it on the label, so the FDA must, in fact, have approved that.
Well, that's what she told me.
Yeah,
The FDA has approved that.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be on the label if...
In other words, the government is always right. Doesn't make any mistakes.
No, I'm saying if there's a mistake, isn't the person she talked with. It's a mistake of the government.
Yeah, well, you're right, Tom. Maybe exactly right. If they're following the the rules, and peanut oil is not listed, and peanut oil is an allergen. Now, I'm going to run this by people. I assume, and I cannot imagine, that peanut oil, if for somebody who is severely allergic, is not going to produce an allergic reaction. And why it's not listed, as Tom said, may indeed be a government issue in that this is a mistake in the rules that they laid out. Now, Tom is assuming that the FDA is at fault. It may be the FDA, and it may be the way the rules are interpreted by the company, that they don't have to list that as an allergen. But I certainly do not think that you should give peanut oil to anyone who has had anaphylaxis. Well, that doesn't make any sense
to me. On the other hand, if you give your daughter a chip and she's okay, then that'll answer the question.
Yeah, right. That's right. I would not do that. That's right. That is not a test that I would recommend that you engage in.
It's research.
That's research. There you go. There you go. Well, you know what? I'm going to find out some stuff. You let us know if you get any information.
I will.
Send us an email. Send it back. I'm going to run it past my allergy people. I can't imagine that peanut oil is not an allergy to kids who take peanuts, and I would stay away from it. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. You know, Zorba, on a recent show, we talked about healthy tips for traveling abroad.
Yes, we did.
Well,
yes,
we received this question in our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox from a young woman in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
She writes, I will be traveling to wonderful Italy for 2.5 weeks of fun.
Sounds good to me.
I've heard many horrible stories about bed bugs in hostels and hotels. Can I protect myself from being bitten with a DEET bug spray?
Well, the answer is possibly. The bed bugs are they're a big issue. They're a huge issue now in Europe all over. Bed bugs, we thought, sort of had disappeared. They really had disappeared. And now they're coming back, especially in hostels. They disappeared for about 30 or 40 years, maybe even 50 years. They were hardly an issue. And these insect infestations like scabies, bed bugs are obviously another one that we're talking about, and lice appear to occur in epidemic form in different times. For instance, scabies was much more of an epidemic about 4 or 5 years ago than it happens to be now.
And for some reason, they go away.
Well, no, what
for
happens
some
is they're in there. They're living there, and they're living in the mattress. And when you're on the mattress and you warm it up, then they come up and they bite you, and they're horrible. The DEET may decrease that ability. So the answer is yes, I would definitely take some DEET. What I would also recommend doing if you're traveling around is in camping stores, and I've read about this, I haven't looked for it myself, you can buy sheets that are impregnated with, just like you can buy clothing, which is impregnated essentially with an insecticide. It's a new thing. And so what I would recommend is that you buy a DEET impregnated sheet and that you take that sheet with
travel
you.
Travel with your own sheet.
You bet. But you put it on top of the bed and it's a DEET impregnated sheet. And it might not use DEET. It might use another type of insecticide, but these are other things that I would use. And if not, I would take DEET. I would definitely take it with me and I would just consider a sheet that I impregnated myself with DEET and I'd put it on the bed. But I would use these DEET impregnated sheets. And you can buy clothing now that is impregnated with an insecticide.
And these are sheets that you can throw in the washing machine and everything and they make
I don't know how long it stays on there. So, but she's a young person traveling in Europe in hostels.
Maybe
how often
maybe
does she wash your sheet?
Maybe
it's two weeks. Use the same sheet. She, you know, sleep with your clothes on.
Maybe she's 80 and she's traveling in Italy in hostels.
Yes, maybe she's 80. Well, that's okay. When you're 80, you can do the same thing. You can just pretend that you're like a college student and you live on the same sheet for a couple of years.
We appreciate the email. That's interesting.
A couple years would
interesting.
Be a
I never heard of those sheets before.
Yeah.
We like hearing from you.
And wait a minute. It's not just the sheets. She should have a good time when she's in Italy. She has to eat the food, enjoy it, and don't worry about the bed bugs.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
Even if you get them.
Even if you get them.
Okay. We like hearing from you. Just send us your questions, tips, and comments to our email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Question for Zorba? Give us a call. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys today?
We're great. How can we help you?
Yeah, I have a problem. I have found myself to be addicted to nasal spray.
That is a problem.
Yeah, I have sinus problems, not allergies, and I've quit a few times, but I always end up going back, and each time I've quit, it's a really horrible time.
I know exactly what
the withdrawal symptoms are horrible.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The same thing happened to me. You get these sprays, and you spray, and that helps. And so you keep on spraying, and pretty soon, before you know it, the whole cold or whatever you had is gone, but you're still congested unless you use that spray. And once you stop using that spray, it feels like, I've never gone through this process, but it feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, listener, like you're going off of a heavy drug.
Yes, exactly.
Like drug withdrawal. You have body convulsions. this is not funny. You throw up. You feel like you're going to die.
Exactly.
Except he's a doctor. He's laughing at horrible conditions of withdrawal from nasal spray.
It's embarrassing in a sense.
I change the station.
I'm sorry.
You don't want to hear him.
It's not heroin. It's not heroin. But Tom is right. Tom is right. Please, I have to give him some respect.
Even though I laughed at him, Tom.
Even though I laughed at him, Tom is right.
It's all right. I get used to it. The thing I need to do is I need to wean myself off of this stuff, and I don't want to go through the horrible withdrawal symptoms. And I was just wondering if there's any kind of suggestion.
I've got a whole plan for you. First of all, I want to tell you how to get rid of this, and then I have to tell you what you have to do to avoid this.
Mm-hmm.
Step
Great.
Number one, you're going to buy something called a neti pot, N-E-T-T-I. Pot, P-O-T. These are a little pot that you fill up with a saline solution, and you squirt, you put it in your nose, and what it does is a little saline fluid goes in one nostril and out the other nostril. Very useful for some symptomatic relief for you to use while you're going through withdrawal. That's the first thing. The second thing, this is non-pharmacologic. The second thing you need is a nasal spray called Ocean. Smells just like the ocean. It's generic. It's a saline nasal spray. You're going to be using it. Okay. Now we're going to talk about the drugs. The next thing you have to do is you have to take all of the spray that you have and you have to get it out of the house and throw it in the garbage. When you start, you can't have any spray around. None. Got it?
Okay.
Very important. Before you start, you have to call your doctor and you have to get two prescriptions. You have to get a prescription for a steroid nasal spray. Now, have you ever used a steroid nasal spray?
I have one time, that was it.
What you have to do is get a prescription. Flonase is one name. Nasonex is another name. Becanase is another name. There are about six different sprays. They're called steroid nasal sprays. The next thing you need, if you want to do it, is a five-day course of oral steroids called a Medrol Dose Pack. Medrol-dose-pack, and they come in a generic form. And what you do is this. This is how you start out. Day one. You start the spray, two puffs twice a day, and you start the steroid pills. That's day one. That night, you take the spray out of the house and you destroy it so you can't touch it. And I mean out of the house, otherwise you'll take a spray. Day number two, all you do is use the steroid nasal spray. You can use it three or four times a day. You'd use this neti pot, like I said, and you use the other spray called Ocean, and that's what you do. What's going to happen that next day is your nose is going to all of a sudden clamp shut like a vice, open up, maybe a minute later, 2 minutes later, clamp shut and open up. But the steroids for 5 or 6 days will shorten the course and make life much better for you.
Yeah.
Now, I have to tell you something. Mm. You need a daily steroid spray in your nose. That's what you need.
Isn't that like addiction to that?
No,
as well?
It is not
an
addiction.
You don't get addicted to that.
You don't get addicted to a nasal spray, and you need it to clear out your sinuses, and I would stay on it for 3 to 6 months, seriously. And then I would use it as needed. The steroid spray is a wonderful spray. It is not an addictive spray at all. And that's what I use in my nose now. As soon as I get a cold, I start a steroid nasal spray because I know 2 days later my sinuses are going to become congested. And then I use that neti pot, and I use the saline spray, and I have stayed away from the over-the-counter sprays now for 5 to 10 years, because they're a big problem.
On that neti pot, where would I be able to purchase
any
like
pharmacy
that?
But it's called Sinucleanse. That's one of the name brands, Sinucleanse. Call up a pharmacist, say you need a neti pot. It's very common. If not, they sell them in health food stores too.
Thank you so much. I'm
a
glad
pleasure.
I'm not the only one that has to go through this.
You are not. We know someone else, at least someone else that went through it. Well, I didn't give the proper respect.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. You mentioned another problem in our growing society, Zorba, and that's hospitals having to make changes because of obesity.
Oh, it's a big issue. Big issue in hospitals. A number of hospitals have now had to go through changes because the people who work with people who are obese are getting back pain when they move them. They're not enough of what we call Hoyer lifts, and they're these big lifts that will lift people out of the bed into other places. The wheelchairs now have to be double-sized. The beds that are made for 350 pounds are not big enough. The doorways have to be bigger to get in the bigger beds and to get in the bigger wheelchairs. The operating room tables, they now have to make tables that are bigger because people are lapsing over the tables and they're not able to get on the tables in a comfortable position. And you look at it, especially in the hospital, because people who are morbidly obese have more medical problems. It's a big issue, and they now have to have wards. In some hospitals, they're developing wards for obese people so that everyone on the ward, they're more lifts and they're heavy, and they can lift heavier things.
Yeah, no matter how much you flap your lips, and lots of other people do too, about trying to reverse this trend, it just doesn't seem to be. You would think that as a society we would be able to stop this obesity.
What has happened is, if we look at the obesity trends, they're still going up. Now, there is hope in the fact that if we look at the heart attack trends of the 60s and the smoking trends of the early 60s, more and more people were smoking per capita in the early 60s when essentially cigarettes were still advertised. More and more people were dying prematurely from heart attacks. The smoking rate dropped. 50% of the adults smoked in 1950. 50 to 70, it was about 70% of the men and about 40% of the women, and that's dropped to below 20%. If we look at heart attack trends, they've dropped. There is always hope that these trends will drop, but we don't have a handle on it because as a society issue, we haven't said we can't do this and started to move to a healthier environment. And this is a big issue.
There's a sort of workman comp issue, too. There's a sort of a sister story to this story on hospitals and the changes that they're having to make that you mentioned, and that's child safety
seats. Child safety seats.
They're having to make bigger child safety seats.
Right, because the safety seats, basically, the idea was that three-year-olds would weigh less than 40 pounds, and now there are a lot of three-year-olds who weigh more than 40 pounds. And it's a good example. I had a young man in my office, ninth grade, yesterday, in my office, who I did a pre-sports physical because he's going out for baseball, and he weighed 260 pounds. And he was 14 years old, and he had a pre-sports physical. And I talked a little bit about food, and he said, yes, I'm a little overweight. And I looked at him and I thought, you are 100 pounds overweight. I don't want to insult him, but he's not a little. It's 100 pounds overweight. And he goes, yeah, I don't eat very much, but I do snack a bit at night. And I thought, this is an issue. The mom wasn't there. The mom suffers from obesity too. But as a society issue, we have difficult getting our hands around it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of have our heads in the clouds.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We do. And it's a big problem.
800-462-7413, toll free. 800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in the Bronx in New York. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, my husband is 47 years old, and most of his life he's been getting these abscesses. And he's been to many doctors over the years, and nobody could tell him how, if there's something he's doing, that is something he's eating that causes them, or if there's something he can do nutritionally to prevent them from happening as often. And he goes to dermatologists, they lance it, they drain it. It's usually filled with pus.
Right.
I know this is gross, but it's a gross thing. And
sure,
if he doesn't get them lanced and drained, they're incredibly painful.
Oh, yes,
because
they're
just
these
grow
are terrible
and grow.
Things. Right. They're terrible things.
So then once he gets them taken care of, the wound heals. It doesn't look pretty when it heals. It scars. And
now, he's been on antibiotics long term?
He has been on antibiotics for this, and that's helping him a little bit. Mm-hmm. The last doctor that he saw gave him, is it doxycycline?
Yeah, doxycycline.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that seems to help, but he loves to eat things like sausage and sopressata and capicola and salami. And I'm wondering if these are things that are causing them to appear more often.
Yeah. I wish I could say that. I wish I could say that sausages and things of that nature would do it. This is a problem. It's a problem in that some people have sweat glands that get infected. I have probably in my practice maybe 4 to 6 people over a period of my practice who have had the same problem, where the glands under the arms get infected and they periodically have to be lanced. As far as I know, and I've done some research on it, there's no relationship to food. There's no relationship to exercise. They don't have to necessarily be
deodorant.
Heavy. That's a good question. That's a good question. Whether or not deodorant or the aluminum there would make a difference, but it doesn't appear to be an aluminum issue. And as I said, the research doesn't seem to show that the deodorant will make an issue. The treatment for this, frankly, is long-term antibiotics, where you take a drug such as doxycycline, 100 milligrams twice a day, or minocycline, 100 milligrams a day, and you stay on it for a long time. So we're talking about a year or two. And then what people will do is they may stay on it or they may periodically go off of it. So in other words, they may stay on it every day and other people stop it. And then when they start having trouble, some pain, they go back onto it. But antibiotics are the key to this.
But nothing like looser clothing, looser shirts, or any kind of diet would affect this?
Looser shirts, clothing, diet doesn't seem to have any effect on it at all. Sometimes pressure is on it for men but you don't wear pressure under your arms, you know. Unless you're wearing something under your arms, it doesn't really make a difference. Mm-hmm. So how long has he been on the doxycycline?
At least a year, if not longer.
At least a year. Is he still having them on the doxycycline?
They're not as big. Uh-huh. They seem to inhibit the growth a little bit.
What I would do is a couple of other things. I would look towards minocycline, which is another antibiotic. If that failed, I would look towards erythromycin, which is another antibiotic. Mm-hmm. And if that failed, I would look at a sulfa drug to see if that failed. That's the answer to this. It's antibiotic suppression on that. But it's a big problem because once it occurs, it just tends to recur.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Our pleasure. Appreciate the call. Recipe coming up.
Yes, a good one. Lamb chops.
In mint sauce. And we get to have the mint sauce without the really good stuff, the lamb chops.
That's right.
But Zorba has the recipe for the whole shebang, and more of your calls coming up, too, here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? Give us a call now. Before we take our next call, though, Zorba, it is, of course, recipe time.
Yes, it is, Tom. Yes,
lamb chops in mint sauce.
That's right, mint sauce. And, you know, it's interesting. We talk about healthy food all the time. And you say, well, lamb, it's red meat. You know, physician, how can you talk about red meat and be healthy? The fact is, I think cutting down on red meat is great. I'm not a vegan. I'm not a vegetarian. I think those are wonderful lifestyles for many people who want to take that. I'm an omnivore. I like all different kinds of food. To me, that's just the spice of life. And I happen to love lamb. And the question is, how do we fit red meat in our diet? Well, even if you have heart disease, you can have that occasional red meat. It's that you shouldn't have it every day.
Right.
That's really the issue. You can have it on that holiday basis, or you can have it once a month. And to me, lamb happens to be a taste that I grew up in and I love. We had it every Thursday at home. I would never have it every Thursday, obviously.
Yeah, here, I like lamb too. I don't have it.
It's very good.
I have it maybe
and
twice a year or something.
In our area, there are a lot of local growers who produce organic lamb, which is their sort of free-range lamb, and it's absolutely delicious. So when you're looking for lamb chops, which are very expensive as they are, I'd also look towards local farmers. I'd look towards organic lamb chops. I'd look in your areas. I'd go to farmer's market in the summer, identify a lamb producer. Sometimes you can get lamb and freeze it, and it's really good. And the thing about lamb is it's very tasty. You don't have to eat a lot of it to be able to get that wonderful taste. And when you look at red meat in this country, about 60% of all red meat that's consumed is hamburger.
Right.
So it's enormous amount of stuff that you don't need. You don't need to consume except that occasional burger. What you want to do if you're going to eat red meat, eat it right and have a cut that you like.
Like this recipe.
You bet. So starts out with 8 lamb chops.
So this will feed 4?
Right. That's what we look
feed
at.
Feed two.
Let's look at the recipe. It's 190 calories, okay?
Yeah.
So it's 190 calories per serving if we do eight.
Yeah.
So if you double it, it's roughly 400 calories. Well, 400 calories is okay for a main meal at home, so you can have two. If you triple it, it's 600 calories. If you're getting your calories from somewhere else and you have a 2,000-calorie diet, there's nothing wrong with having 600 calories. Have this with some asparagus on the side, and have a salad. We use salt and pepper and a little olive oil. And you've got a 700-calorie meal, which is delicious and nutritious, and you're eating three lamb chops. That's very satisfying.
It is.
The problem with us is that we often eat foods that are not satisfying, and that's the issue. Have a wonderful, satisfying meal.
Started off with eight lamb chops.
That's right. Quarter teaspoon of kosher salt.
Quarter little tea kosher salt.
Now, we use kosher salt because the salt particles are not as refined as regular salt. Kosher salt or sea salt is excellent to use on the grill all of the time. That's the only salt you should use because you've got these globs of salt and they taste saltier when they hit your tongue and they give it a much brighter taste. And what happens is you can use less salt and make it taste better.
Okay.
Quarter teaspoon of fresh ground pepper.
Quarter little tea, fresh ground
pepper. Remember we talked about
this?
Did you get a pepper grinder? Come on.
Moving
you got to
right
get
along.
A pepper grinder. They're now $2, these pepper grinders. Go to the store. You can buy the McCormick ones. They're wonderful. They taste really good.
So I then have to carry it around so I can put it on my burger when I go to
your
fast
burger.
Food.
Your burger. There we go. Quarter teaspoon of saffron.
Quarter little tea of saffron.
Now, I buy my saffron not in a grocery store. Way too much. Go to an ethnic grocery store, Chinese, Japanese,
saffron's
Indian grocery
expensive.
Store. You bet. But you can get saffron that is less expensive. Saffron is the stamen from a flower that grows in Spain, and that's the real saffron. Very expensive. But they make saffron that comes from the Philippines and other areas. It uses a stamen from other flowers.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheaper, and it still is saffron, but it's a different kind of a saffron that's not the elegant saffron, if you will. It's the robust saffron,
and that's what I use. Does it not taste as good?
No, it tastes like saffron to me, and it costs one-tenth the price. I can buy a little $5 thing of saffron and use $2 in this recipe, and that's what I use. Ethnic grocery stores have it. Don't buy the name
brand. Gotcha. Okay.
Cooking spray.
Cooking spray.
Yeah, cooking spray. You got to use cooking spray. Why? Because you're using lamb chops. It's a low-fat lamb recipe.
Right.
Okay. 1 cup of fat-free yogurt.
A cup of fat-free yogurt.
That's right. Fat-free yogurt. You can get it. We're going to use fat-free
yogurt
because we're getting the fat from the lamb. So don't go to low-fat. Go to fat-free.
Yeah, plain yogurt.
That's right. Plain.
Okay.
Yes. Be careful. Plain. Yeah. Make sure it doesn't have any vanilla, any sweetener in it.
Right.
A clove of garlic crushed.
A clove of crushed
garlic. Yeah. If you like garlic like I do, whenever it says one clove, I put in five.
Yeah, right.
Automatically.
Right.
Whenever it says one clove, I put in five.
Right.
It's so much. It's so great. 2 tablespoonfuls of fresh mint chopped.
2 big tea of chopped fresh
Where do you
mint?
Buy your mint?
At the mint store.
At the mint store. If you buy the mint at the mint store in a grocery store, you'll pay $1 or $2. If you go to an ethnic grocery store, they often have fresh mint that's 1/2 to 1/4 of the price.
Okay.
Very good place to shop.
Yeah.
And a lime that's sliced.
A lime sliced.
Yeah, I always look at trying to sort of be a cheap gourmet. Okay. Pre-heat the broiler. You can use this on the broiler. You can also do it on the grill, and that's what we do in Wisconsin. Summer and winter, I grill all the time.
Mm.
Pre-heat the broiler. Spray the broiler with a cooking spray. Very important to make sure this doesn't stick because lamb chops will stick. Season the chops with kosher salt, ground pepper, and saffron. Very important, that little saffron that you put over there. Place the chops on the pan. Broil each side for 5 to 6 minutes, depending on the thickness. If you want to make sure that you're absolutely going to be pink in the center, look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I like my lamb rare. It tastes much better. You can also get a little thermometer and then read the thermometer and look up what it should be. I think the inside is about 140 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a mixing bowl, combine the yogurt, the garlic, and the fresh mint, and bon appetit. Put your lamb down there. Put the garlic sauce on the side. You can garnish with salad lime, or you can do what I do. You can put the lime over the lamb chop.
Yeah, or you could just dip it in piece by piece.
You could dip it in piece by piece, and you
could
put the lime on there.
You like it over the...
I like it on the lamb. Very interesting taste. Lime on the top of lamb. Very interesting. So you may want to try
it. I love lamb chops, and I like your regular mint sauce, but you've assigned Adam...
Yes, I've assigned Adam to do it, and we're going to open up some nice crackers.
This doesn't look like mint sauce. It's a creamy color.
It's wonderful. It's creamy. So we've got some wonderful stuff. Oh, wait, I'm going to dip in first, and you... Oh, we're both in. Let me see. Wow.
Well?
That is bright.
That's very good.
I like. I'm gonna have another one. This is delicious. Oh, you know what this? You know this mint sauce would be great with some veggies too. You know what? we don't need the lamb for this mint sauce.
Mm. Mm. Well, yes, we do.
Mint sauce is great. This is also great, not just on lamb. This would be great as a dip for vegetables. Great with some carrots, some broccoli. I'm sorry, I hate to ruin it. Okay, it's only for lamb. Only for lamb.
Well,
want to have the recipe? Come to our website at www.zorbapastor.org, and you can get this wonderful, delicious recipe and cook your lamb tonight.
Or we're happy to send you the recipe. Just address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. If you'd like us to send it to you, enclose a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope and send it along to us. We'll send the recipe right back to you. is our toll-free number. 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, a listener with us now in Minocqua, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
How can we help you?
I consider myself a pretty healthy person. I exercise regularly. I eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't smoke. I barely ever drink.
Okay.
And the other day I had my blood pressure taken, and it wasn't high, high, but it was high enough that it frustrated me. It was 141 over 93.
Uh-huh. Well, that's high blood pressure.
And I'm just wondering if there's something else that I can be doing to make it better.
Not necessarily. Let me talk a bit about this and the importance. First of all, you looked at all the good things you are. If you were obese and you ate too much salt and you never exercised, you never did all those things, we'd say, look, why don't you lose 10 pounds? We'll look and see what your pressure is. One measurement does not mean you have high blood pressure. You need two or three measurements because there's something called white coat hypertension. You go into the doctor's office and you get a little anxious and your blood pressure goes up. So you need a few readings to see what it is. Is this only one reading that you had?
No, it's been high in the past. The 120 over 80. And then for the past year, every time I've had it taken, it's been in that area.
Okay. So you have high blood pressure. That's what it is. High blood pressure, one of the things we do is some lifestyle changes to see if that'll make a difference. And after that, we do medications because they work. And yes, they are frustrating. Yes, it is frustrating to take medications. It's something that no one really likes to do. But the theory is that what is happening is not under mental control. We know that some people get anxious, and that disappears when you have when you have these continuous readings. But real high blood pressure is a problem in the endothelium. The endothelium is the lining of the blood vessels. And what they do is they appear to be abnormal in a production of a gas called nitric oxide. That's the present theory. And nitric oxide is a gas that is used and decides whether or not these blood vessels are tight or relaxed. If they're too tight, then we need more pressure to get through our body, all the blood that we need. And if they're relaxed, they're okay. When they're young, they're relaxed. When they're older, they get tight. Why this occurs, no one has figured out.
So your answer to her is take some medicine.
You bet. You bet. There's no doubt about it. We have dropped the stroke rate by 60%. When I first became a physician to now, the stroke rate is down roughly 60 to 65%. The vast majority of that is due to the treatment of high blood pressure. Years ago, we would never treat blood pressure like you have. And now we know the closer we get to 120 over 80, the better off we are. So you need to be on pills. That's
now,
what you need.
I'm only 26. Is that too young?
Well, 26 is young. Tell me about your family history. Mom and Dad, do they have high blood pressure?
My dad does, not my mom.
At what age?
Probably since he was 40.
Since he was 40. That's sort of young. It's not 20s. Are you on birth control pills? Do you take hormone replacements at all?
I was on birth control, but now I'm trying to get pregnant, so I'm not anymore.
Okay, because that's the issue. The issue is that birth control pills can also be a cause of high blood pressure, and people can go off of it.
And is stress inaccurate?
No, I don't think so. Not a pressure like this. It wouldn't be. I doubt if it would be stress. But you need, if it's in your 20s, you need a little more. In the 50s, 40s, and 50s, we say you have high blood pressure. We don't do much of a workup. In your 20s, there are other things that we look for to see if there's another cause. So I think you ought to get a blood pressure cuff at home, see what your pressure is, get a few readings, go into your doc. You're trying to get pregnant. And then if you need to be on blood pressure pills, it's very important. There's certain pills you do not take when you're pregnant. There are other pills you may take when you're pregnant. There are certain pills called ACE inhibitors that we don't give you when you're pregnant because they can cause side effects. But you need a little more measurement. You need to go to your doc and you need to find out. And if you have it, yes, you may have high blood pressure in your 20s. I've got patients in my 20s who are on pills. Minimal doses do tremendous things for them.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're
for
welcome
the call.
And good luck.
800-462-7413. A listener with us now in Ewing, New Jersey. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
How can we help?
I'm an ex-smoker. And on one.
Congratulations, by the way. I always like to congratulate ex-smokers. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. The deal is, I was listening on the road, and I heard a woman talk about her problem with weight gain. And one of the things that was mentioned was increase in appetite.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've been there, done that. I've
sure.
seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this. After stopping,
mm-hmm.
things taste so good. A carrot or an apple.
Yes, yes,
Had such
yes.
an appeal.
Yes, they taste much better. That's exactly it. Sure, because your taste buds are working better, which are taste buds, the way we smell things, it's completely different. You're not smoking. You don't have all that tar and nicotine and junk in your nose. Yeah, food
well,
does taste
better. Well,
you
know, that was the basis of the question. The lack of that irritant, you might say,
mm-hmm.
and when that's gone, since
right.
I was about a pack and a half a day when I stopped,
uh-huh.
I thought, you know, in my own experience, hey, my taste buds are just opened up, my nose is opened up,
mm-hmm.
maybe things just taste better, and maybe in conjunction with appetite change, you got two things that are working against you.
Well, you're right in probably two ways. And it's interesting when you say that. I smoked in college, smoked for about 3 years, quit, smoked a pipe for about a year, and then finally quit that, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was like everyone else. And it was tough. Took me 4 times to quit smoking, I remember. Cigarettes went up 3 cents a pack, and I said, I can't afford it. It was interesting. I said, 3 cents a pack. I think now when I go, wow, imagine what it was like at this 3 cents a pack. But I remember now, and you just brought it up, how much better food tasted, how much more vibrant it was. That may be part of it. All of a sudden, food tastes good. But people who smoke cigarettes, when they start smoking, tend to lose about 5 to 10 pounds. And it just is, it's probably that nicotine or something within the tobacco is actually an appetite suppressant. So,
uh-huh.
And there are lots of issues with that. They've tried nicotine patches to see if nicotine patches will help people lose weight, and it doesn't do it. So it's not just the nicotine. Now, how'd you quit? That's what I want to know. How'd you do it?
It was one of those things where I used peer pressure. I had read about you really ought to tell everybody, advertise it, let everybody know this is going to happen. It was a New Year's Eve party. I held up. At 11:55, I said, here's the last one. See this, guys? Everybody saw me.
Yeah.
So the next time they saw me, they said, did you stop? I said, yeah.
Yeah, peer pressure is part of it.
Yeah.
There's several things that work, and many people use them. The pills work, bupropion under the name brand Zyban. They help. What also helps is nicotine replacement by gum, lozenge, spray, patch, whichever way you want to do it. People
yep.
call them crutches. They're not crutches. They're aids. And so they help a lot of people. They double and triple your chances of quitting. You didn't need it. You use peer pressure. Some people use everything. Peer pressure, pills, and gum. Whatever works,
yeah.
congratulations. Do it. My kudos to you. It's not easy, but once you're on that other side, you go, wow, I'm so glad I don't have the cigarettes anymore.
I understand the peer pressure thing, because then if you go back to doing
yeah,
it again, you're a fool, everybody.
You bet.
But when I
you
quit
bet.
The pipe, it was
yeah.
exactly the opposite. I told no one, made
that
no
is
kind
true.
Of fuss about
that
it.
Is true. That
and,
is true.
And waited weeks
That's,
before
that
I said it
that
out loud, because I was
right.
afraid of exactly
yeah.
what he
true.
Was.
Now, was it hard for you or easy for you?
For some reason, it wasn't that hard for
Yeah, isn't that interesting? It's
Although
interesting.
I still every now and then
yeah.
think.
Yeah, every now and then you like to have a little
smoking
pipe full
a pipe
of tobacco.
Was kind of nice.
Right. yeah, kick back and fill it up with tobacco
yeah.
and enjoy that pipe. Full.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. More of your calls coming up and some interesting research too here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, our number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, I'm intrigued by your research connecting midnight munchies to sleeping pills.
That's right. If we look at America at the number of people taking sleeping pills, it's blossomed over the last decade. Roughly about 20 to 30 million people take sleeping pills on a regular basis. That's more than 3 or 4 days a week in order to get to sleep.
You see ads on the TV
all the time. And, you know, if you look at the sleep industry, if you look at sleeping beds and sleeping pills and sleeping aids, it's a big issue. Very clearly, as America, we're concerned about sleep all the time. We don't feel like we get enough sleep. Well, maybe it's because we work too hard during the day. I don't know. But the sleeping pills are an issue. Now, Ambien is a very, very popular sleeping pill.
That's the one you see the ad for.
You bet.
All the time.
You bet. One of the ones. You see other ones for Lunesta that is out there.
Right.
And the thing about that is Ambien is going generic. It's going to be generic, so it's going to start to be cheaper. So you've got other pills that are coming on the market that are going to compete with it. This is a very common thing. Well, this is a sleeping disorder that has just recently been found that appears to be linked to Ambien. It may not be linked to some of the older sleeping pills, although I do question that. And the sleep disorder is the fact that it may cause the midnight munchies, that people who take Ambien appear to go on to some binge eating and may be asleep, it says, while they're having sex. Now, that seems like to be an odd thing, because obviously you have to be aroused and awake in order to have sexual function. But there may be some memory disturbance, and it may be that there's some sleepiness that's associated with it, and they don't remember having any sexual function at the end of the night.
I don't quite understand what's
going on. It's odd things.
Are you saying that people take the sleeping pill and then wake up and munch or have sex?
Right.
Is that it?
No, they take the sleeping pill, and they're sort of half awake, and they may go to the refrigerator, and they may get some food, and they don't remember necessarily eating that food the next morning. Or they engage in sexual relations. Obviously, they're with, you know, the person that they're with, and they don't remember actually having sexual relations with that person. Now, this is rather interesting because we've known before this that an older sleeping pill called Halcyon, which is part of a benzodiazepine, Valium, Halcyon, Ativan, there are drugs in this class. We know that mixed with alcohol can produce not only the desire to eat, but also a memory loss.
Yeah, but
it appears that Ambien may produce this memory loss also.
I don't understand what the problem is. So you take the sleeping pill, you get some food, or you have some sex.
Well,
so what?
Well, the problem is people don't necessarily, let's look from the food point of view. You may be trying to lose weight, and here it is, you take a sleeping pill, and you don't realize that in the middle of the night you're getting up and eating. Or you may be sleeping with somebody, and for whatever reason, you don't want to have sex with that person that you're sleeping with in the bed. The issue is you're taking pills, and the pills may change your behavior in an unwanted way.
800-462-7413. Zorba listener joins in now in Mount Pleasant, Texas. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Very good.
How can we help you?
Well, I have some friends of mine here that are Noni salesmen, Tahitian Noni to be exact, and they are encouraging all of us to use it and are pretty religious about its supposed health benefits, saying it'll cure everything from diabetes to cancer to psoriasis.
Mm-hmm.
Give you a better gas mileage if you pour it in your tank.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. Anything that cures diabetes, cancer, and that, I want to see that. That's what I want. I want to get rid of all the diabetes and cancer. That'd be great. Right. And I want better gas mileage, too, at the same time.
Right. But the only people that I see that really claim to have wonderful results are those that at the same time are selling it.
Oh.
Yeah, you know,
what
a coincidence. It's shocking. Shocking.
Isn't
it actually shocks me. That's right. Those that are selling it.
I just wondered what you knew of it.
Yes. Well, I, too, have been approached by the Noni people.
Yeah.
And, you bet. I get approached by all those people. Guess what they want me to do?
Endorse them.
That's right. They want me to endorse it, or they actually approach me and they actually go, look, you become part of our group, then you get it for less money, and you could even sell it out of your office. I probably get literally 1 to 2 of these a month, maybe 3 a month. It's not Noni juice. It's fat substitute. It's vitamin, you know, J and vitamin Q, and I get these all the time. I mean, people must think that, well, you know, I'm just going to endorse all of it. There is no scientific evidence in Noni juice. I have no idea where Noni juice came from. I know it's an exotic area. That I understand. Noni juice sounds exotic to me. Can't buy it in the store.
But you don't know what it is, what kind of juice it is.
Some kind of a juice from some kind of...
It's some sort of Polynesian fruit, and they extract this juice from it. And they even claimed that in World War II, the Army recommended soldiers who were downed on these islands, if they were injured, to eat noni fruit. Uh-huh. So
Now, I want to get to that recommendation. I've heard that recommendation. Let's not forget that while the Army may have been recommending noni juice, they were putting camels in the K rations so that our boys would be able to smoke cigarettes. So they gave them camels because they were getting 10 camels
so
in those K rations.
Can't trust the Army for our
can't
health
trust
advice.
Them for, unfiltered camels. They got camels, Lucky Strikes, or Chesterfields in their K rations along with their noni juice. The Army isn't really known for its healthy behavior, certainly not in World War II. Noni juice is good for the noni juice salespeople because it makes them money. There's no science behind it. If you want to spend your money on it, it's another supplement. Go right ahead. But I think it's better to spend your money in the grocery store rather than in the drugstore, whether it's the natural food drugstore or the straight line drugstore. There's no science behind it. So save your bucks. Spend it on some pomegranate juice, which I think is probably delicious tasting and just as good.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate the input
on
that.
And good luck with that gas mileage. Pour it in the tank and see what
happens.
I will
let you know if it works out.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. To Appleton, Wisconsin we go now, Zorba. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have kind of an interesting problem that's been happening sort of throughout my life, and it's when I hit my knee or my hip or my elbow, I'll feel it coming on and I'll just pass out.
So where are you when this occurs, when you pass out?
Well, wherever I happen to be when I
So it happens anywhere.
Myself.
No, that's my question. So in other words, you bang your knee.
This happened a couple of weeks ago and I hit myself in my living room, and so I passed out on my couch.
So how long after you hit do you pass out?
I would say about 20 seconds.
Okay, but there's a big difference between 20 seconds and 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Or five.
Yeah.
So you know what's going to happen?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like I made my way across the room and laid down on the couch.
Okay, so you put yourself in a recumbent position. You knew you were going to pass out. Okay, so you laid down on the couch. What happened next?
Well, then everything went black. Mm-hmm. And what was weird about this last time it happened to me is when I started coming to, at first I was trying to figure out who I was, and then I was trying to figure out where I was and what day it was.
Okay.
And then it all came back.
And that normally doesn't happen to you. You don't pass out to that extent.
Definitely, I'm normally disoriented, but not to that extent.
Uh-huh. So this has gone on since you were how old?
Well, the first time it happened, I was in third grade.
Uh-huh.
I got pushed down. I hit my tailbone on a desk.
Okay, and then you passed out in third. So you remember it in third grade. Doesn't
and
sound like a seizure.
And the people watching me say it happens like I lay down and I get up like 2 seconds later. But to me, it feels like I have a dream and it feels like an hour long, you know?
It's interesting. It sounds like a variation of sleep disturbance when this occurs, if you feel like you have a dream. There are dreams called narcolepsy. There are problems called narcolepsy and cataplexy, you know, where you have these drop attacks of sleep. Do you have it without being injured?
Not to where it's I can't prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do I've always sort of thought I had this driving narcolepsy.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So where when I drive at certain times, I'll just feel like I absolutely have to close my eyes stop it.
Yeah, so what do you do?
I have to pull over and take like a short 1 minute nap is the only way I can.
A 1 minute nap.
Prevent
and you're
it.
All, and you're always able to move over. What if you're in the middle of traffic in a freeway in a busy city like New York?
It's never that instant.
It's
that,
never
it
that instant.
It takes time for it to get me that
so
tired.
So you've got enough warning to have this.
Have you ever had
a sleep study done? Or
no.
Or an EEG to look at your brain waves. Have you ever seen
it? Actually, I think I had an EEG when I was a kid, but I don't remember the results.
Probably when you were young. Have you ever seen a neurologist about this?
Not that I remember.
And you've got a good memory, right? Otherwise. I think you need a neurological workup. That's what I would do. It sounds to me like this is a disturbance. You either need to see a sleep specialist, but I'd start with a neurologist, such as narcolepsy and cataplexy. It sounds like what's happening is pain and discomfort, as well as other events such as driving, institute an instant sleep, and that you're having these intermittent sleep disturbances. All of a sudden, you hit yourself, and you're not passing out, you're going to sleep, that you're going into this deep sleep for 1 or 2 minutes and you're waking up from this deep sleep. There's a difference between that and a faint. And I don't think this doesn't sound to me like a simple, what's called a vasovagal faint. How painful was it when you hit your leg? Was it really painful or just a little painful?
It does hurt, but I've been hurt worse and I haven't fainted.
Okay.
It sort of has
okay.
to be the right
okay.
pain.
Now, do you faint from that other helps. Things like the sight of blood? Are there things that bother you? What do you do?
I've passed out to the sight of blood before.
What do you do for a living?
I'm a math teacher.
What I think you need is you should see a neurologist. That's your first stop. And the neurologist will do a workup and then determine if a sleep study is the most appropriate thing or an EEG, as well as go through this evaluation, and then there are things that you can do. But I think I'd start with neurology. And you need it because of the issues with driving as much as these other attacks.
Students know about your problem?
No.
I was going to say it's
no one in my adult life really has, because it hasn't happened.
Probably a good thing, because those kids
they'd whack you on the knee in the middle of a test. That's right. He'd be standing at the board and say, "Let's watch him work." They'd whack on the knee, and watch the teacher drop to the floor, and then they'd dance and party in the room, and you'd wake up and wouldn't know what happened. Don't tell them at all. That's a great image, Tom. He's back in high school. This man knows how to think like a high schooler.
I can think of some teachers.
We're going to party.
I wish I would have known.
That's right. Whack them on the knee. All math teachers. Whack them on the knee. They have drop attacks. You didn't know that, did you, Tom? Great way to get A's on the test. Look at the book at the answer.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Call us back. Let us know.
Zorba, not long ago, we had a caller on who didn't want to give up running because of an Achilles injury.
Yes.
Well, some of our fellow listeners, and I'm guessing fellow long-distance runners, too, wrote in with a few tips to our caller.
Oh, I'd love to hear those tips.
Thomas in Sayreville, New Jersey, agrees with your advice to keep running. Tom also suffered from Achilles tendonitis and suggested daily toe raises to strengthen the calf muscle.
Excellent idea.
When you stand flat-footed and raise your body weight up with just your toes, Tom said this helped him run farther and cut back on the ibuprofen.
Fabulous.
And one of our California listeners sent us a tip on a special running shoe. This shoe has a spring in the heel to help absorb the shock of running.
Oh, you know, I've heard about this.
This listener said that with the help of these orthotics, he was able to run comfortably for the past year and avoid surgery on his heels.
Great idea.
Sort of putting a spring in his step.
A spring in his step.
We welcome more of your tips. We like your Stump the Doc questions and comments as well. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org, and the email will get there.
We'll see you next week.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Ben and Leo Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0414Z. To buy Zorba's book, The Longevity Code, Your Personal Prescription for a Longer, Sweeter Life, or to pick up a copy of Zorba's Heart Healthy Cookbook, just go to our website at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.